Mr. Bachmann.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, William Bachmann for the defendant appellants, ADT and Barry Kinney. I ask to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. This case presents the issue of the standard applicable to an employee's claim against her employer for intentional infliction of emotional distress arising out of a physical injury. The plaintiff employee, Melissa Kovacs, claims that she sustained physical injury and resulting emotional distress during a disability examination required by her employer, ADT. The trial court granted summary judgment in favor of the employer, finding no intent to injure. A majority of the Court of Appeals reversed, applying a negligence standard to ADT's conduct. Did the employer know or have reason to know that the medical examination would cause emotional distress? One judge of the Court of Appeals dissented, stating that the majority had failed to follow and apply the standard for employers' intentional tort liability adopted by this court in Fife versus Genos.
Counsel, much of the argument on intent seems to exist over the fact that there was a you call it an application, and the other side calls it a granting of disability before you even had that meeting with her that told her that she had to go ahead and get this second exam. How do you qualify it as an application versus an approval of her full disability, the full 7 weeks?
Justice Stratton, the form that Mr. Kinney signed had several parts. He made it very clear on the record that when he signed the form, that his intention and understanding was to certify that she was disabled, but it was his understanding that the period of her disability was in question and that would be resolved by the independent medical examination. The letter asking her to submit to the independent medical examination had gone out before he signed the form, and she was on notice of the request for that examination before the form was signed. This matter came up for the first time in the Court of Appeals. It wasn't developed as fully as it might have been otherwise in the trial court, but the fact of the matter is at the time he signed the form, the section with the disability date was not filled out, and if Virginia Hopp would have been deposed, she would have testified to that. But of course, that's not of record, and that is not something this court can consider. But nevertheless, even if the date had been on, and even if you draw an inference in favor of the appellee, based upon the form and the way it appears in the record, there isn't substantial certainty that this injury was going to occur because of this examination. Again, the question is, what test do you apply? Knew or should have known, and look for genuine issues of material fact under that standard, or do you apply Fife versus Genos? Intent.
Why do you keep applying Fife and Van Fossen to this case of intentional infliction of emotional distress rather than Yeager?
Because this is a case in which the emotional distress resulted from a physical injury. And going to your opinion in Kearns versus Porter Paint, you made it very clear that in a situation where the psychiatric condition results from the injury, that then you are under the workers' comp system and that applies. Now, that's what we have.
That's your interpretation of Karen's and may not be mine. I thought I made it clear that this type of actions, sexual harassment or any other type of injuries occurring in the workplace, weren't even considered in Van Fossen.
They weren't considered in Van Fossen, Justice Resnick.
I mean, the language used, knowledge of an employer of the existence of a dangerous process, procedure, instrumentality, or condition within its business operation, how in the world would that apply to the situation that we have before us?
Because of the nature of the claim. The nature of the claim was that the dangerous instrumentality or procedure here was the medical examination that was ordered under the auspices of the employer.
And my next question to you is, does it make any difference in this complaint that negligence is in fact alleged?
Well, if negligence is alleged, then summary judgment was appropriate if the Fife versus Van Fossen standard applies. Because the only cause of action then is for intent. And then the question becomes actual intent or substantial certainty to injure. Again, the Workers' Compensation Statute 4123.01c says that a psychiatric condition is not an injury unless it arises from a physical injury.
And that's just the point I think that Justice Resnick was making. It's the same question I have, and your response to her was that this is an injury derived from the employment. My understanding was that she had a baby and that she contracted a problem having the baby. How is that work-related? And isn't Fife and Van Fossen, all that line of cases involving intentional tort, workplace injuries?
Well, workplace injury is the focus, Justice Douglas, but it's not the injury sustained having the baby. It's the injury sustained as a result of the medical examination required by the employer that triggers the emotional distress.
So you're right back to the issue of emotional distress being a workplace injury.
Right, and in certain circumstances it can be, and this is one of them.
Well, that's not what a majority of this court, I was in dissent, but a majority of this court said that a broken mind without a contemporaneous physical injury is not compensable under workers' comp. In the Norwood case where the police officer, everybody admitted that his mind was broken because of the job he was on, I think it was drug interdiction.
Without contemporaneous physical injury.
Here we have the contemporaneous physical injury here.
Yes, we do. We have the aggravation of the fistula as a result of the examination insisted upon by the employer.
But how is that work-related?
It's work-related because the employer insisted upon the examination as part of the disability program.
So you're contending that that arose out of her employment?
It did. Yeah, it arose out of her employment because as a condition of her employment, and as part of the employment contract for disability benefits, the employer had a right to insist upon the examination and did insist upon
it. But it did not arise out of a condition of her employment in the traditional sense, did it? Where we use intentional tort, where something occurs in the workplace about which the employer should have had substantial notice of or notice of a substantial.
Not in the run-of-the-mill sense, Justice Moyer, that's correct. But nevertheless, this is within the ambit of employment.
Wouldn't this expand? It's interesting that as an employer, you're urging us to expand the definition, it seems to me, of traditional application of workplace or in the scope of employment.
Employer.
Well, I don't think it's unusual because otherwise you have a different standard that applies, a lesser standard, the standard that's applied by the Court of Appeals. Here, as Judge Porter, I believe, correctly pointed out, we do have something that takes place within the context of the employment relationship. She would not have had to submit to the examination but for the fact that she was an employee of ADT and was part of the disability program. And in the course of taking an examination required by her employer as part of that program, as part of its contractual right under the program, she alleges that she sustained a physical injury, and as a result of that physical injury, she experienced severe emotional distress. So what test applies? Knew or should have known, or substantially certain?
Do you have medical evidence that causally relates your injury claim to the medical examination?
I'm not the plaintiff here.
That is
her position. This is being contested. Dr. Bauer is a defendant. There is a medical malpractice claim.
But you're arguing it's under workers' compensation. And before you can do that, it's got to be causally related to the employment.
You have to be
arguing that the intentional tort standard in Fife was not applied because this is a workplace injury caused by our examination.
That's correct. And if it should be proven as part of this case, and we're still part of the case, that in fact she was not injured as part of the examination, then she doesn't prevail against either ADT or Dr. Bauer. And that's being contested. Dr. Bauer said, I did not hurt this woman. And if that's the case, then her claim goes away. But as the Court of Appeals recognized, and it's on page 10 of the appendix, that her claim is that as a result of the injury she sustained during the examination, she experienced mental anguish. And under those circumstances, she's framed the claim, that's what her claim is, under those circumstances, Fife versus Genos should apply. Now, even if Yeager applies, however, we have a situation where, Judge Porter again recognized in his dissent, there is a privilege. There was a legal right to insist on this examination, and it was done in a permissible way. She was sent a letter. She objected to the doctor. She wanted a different physician. ADT went to the Cleveland Academy of Medicine. They got a board-certified OBGYN, who was a graduate of Harvard Medical School, and referred her to him for the examination. They had a legal right to do that. They did it in a permissible way, and therefore it should be privileged. And finally, the third argument being that...
Did the employer insist on how the doctor should assess? I mean, I guess that's, you're saying they didn't insist on the procedure that injured.
No.
They said, go see this doctor.
Go see the doctor.
And can we assume that doctors, you know, do no harm, that he would do what he could to assess her condition for the employer short of causing any injury?
That's precisely the point of the third argument.
If the employer insisted on a particular procedure, you'd have, a tougher road to go. But did the?
No, not at all. He insisted that Mrs. Kovacs see Dr. Bauer, but did not give Dr. Bauer specific directions as to what kind of examination to conduct. They left that up to his medical judgment. Again, her doctor said could possibly cause injury.
But didn't they indicate to the doctor what areas that they're particularly interested in, and that examination should cover that type of problem?
They advised Dr. Bauer of her condition, what she said the problem was.
Gave her the problem.
Right.
Gave her the area and so forth and so
right.
on, and said, listen, make an examination of this area. So they didn't leave it up to the doctor to discover just by examining the woman. They directed him to a specific area of the woman to be examined. The doctor did that. Now, how can you say that they didn't have any direction over the doctor's examination?
They brought the condition to the doctor's attention, but they did not preempt the doctor's judgment and tell him what kind of medical examination to perform. They left it up to his professional judgment as to what kind of examination he would perform.
But they directed the doctor to a specific area of the woman to examine. They didn't examine her arm.
That's correct. They told him what the condition was.
He wasn't free just to make a general examination and say, doctor, examine her, and if you find anything wrong anywhere, let us know. They specifically pointed out the area that and his examination is only based in that area, nothing else.
But they did not preempt the doctor's judgment as to whether or not to perform an internal examination. That was left to the professional judgment of Dr. Bauer.
But they knew he had to do an internal examination if he was to examine the area that they were interested in.
Not necessarily.
Really?
Really. Justice Cook.
You mean he could look at the woman and say, nothing wrong with you?
No, what he could do,
well,
and it's Justice...
Well, he had to go to the area that he was directed
that's
to by
correct.
The employer.
That's correct, Justice
right.
Sweeney. But as Justice Cook pointed out, the doctor's first and foremost responsibility under the Hippocratic Oath is to do no harm. He's going to take a medical history. He's going to review the records. And if he determines, based on the review of the records, that an internal examination isn't indicated, he's not going
to
perform
it. All I'm trying to say is the employer had some control or some input into the area that the examination should take place. Is that correct?
Input into the examination, control over the professional judgment as to the type of examination, no. Okay. Input, yes. Control over the examination,
but isn't
no.
it even stronger than that? Your Mr. Kinney called her into a meeting. She told him that her doctor said, no, I shouldn't do this because it'll cause a problem. And he said, fine, don't do it. Your disability benefits are in jeopardy. You know
that's correct.
Happened?
That's correct. That's what he said.
That's pretty persuasive.
It is persuasive. Certainly.
Go to the doctor.
Well, go to the doctor.
Yeah, isn't your point that this issue here is intent to cause emotional
correct.
Harm?
That's the issue.
And an employer is sending someone to a doctor for a second opinion because they question the woman's credibility, and they get the name of the doctor from the medical society, which is not certainly directing her to some doctor that's, I would guess, that they think is going to cause her harm. That the employer here appears to be doing something that doesn't suggest harm. I mean, the doctor, you would assume the doctor would have a way to examine her, or perhaps not invasive, perhaps not internal, but just give an opinion. I mean, it's one thing to say there might have been negligence, but something else to say that there's an intention here to cause her emotional distress. Isn't that your point?
That's my point, precisely it.
If the company had said, we want you to internally examine her. We don't care whether she's hurt or not, that's a different case, but that's not what they did here.
That's not what happened.
It doesn't affect that if the woman feels and believes and she's been told that the examination is harmful, isn't that the mental stress we're talking about, even though it didn't cause her any physical damage?
That's not the mental distress for which a remedy is being sought here. The mental distress for which a remedy is being sought here is the mental distress caused by the physical injury sustained allegedly during the examination.
Well, she was so concerned that she was even willing to give up these benefits, and Mr. Kenny said that's not an option.
That's correct. She says that. He denies that he said that. But in any event, the decision was going to be made at the home office in New Jersey, not at Mr. Kenny's level.
Thank you, Mr. Bachman. You've used your time.
Thank you.
Mr. Henderson.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Lou Henderson on behalf of the appellee, Melissa Kovacs. It is our opinion that there are genuine issues of material fact as to whether the appellants in this case, their actions constituted intentional infliction of emotional distress.
It is pretty novel, isn't it, counsel, to suggest that it would be that a visit to a physician, board certified in the right specialty, would be a method of inflicting harm on a. Do you suggest that the requirement of an internal examination was insisted upon by the employer?
Well, let me clarify one issue, Your Honor. This was not a board certified OBGYN. He was a general surgeon. In his testimony, he had not done any research or work on a rectovaginal fistula since 1960. That's 35 years ago.
But I thought that somehow this chosen physician was Dr. Bauer.
That's correct.
Was somehow agreed upon by the employer and your client.
That's not true. She had no choice. This was not a decision of hers. It was a decision of the
appellant. She said she wouldn't go to the first doc.
That's correct. He wasn't even a general surgeon.
Yeah, okay. She said, okay, this, and I prefer a different doc like mine. She said, I want a doctor like my doctor.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. One who specializes. It's a very specific type of injury. And I think we're not speaking of a simple low back problem when you can go into a doctor and he does a simple neurological or orthopedic exam and says, okay, you're fine.
But I mean, we're not physicians, and the employer wasn't a physician, and nor was your client.
Correct.
All of us rely upon the expertise of physicians in these matters.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so the employer has a disability contract. They say this, unfortunately, this employee had missed a fair amount of work, or for whatever reasons, the contract said we get a second opinion. And so they send her for the second opinion, knowing that she said it might cause, my doctor said it might cause me harm, a certain sort of exam.
That's correct.
And the employer doesn't insist on that sort of exam. What have they done?
Well, they've insisted on the exam in an impermissible way.
Okay.
She told them at this meeting on February 8th, look, she was upset, she was concerned. She said, I'll give up my pay, I'll give up my benefits. Don't let me go to this exam. Their comment was, you have no choice.
What specifically had her own doctor told her about this second opinion?
She had contacted him I believe the day or two before. He said, don't do it because of the reoccurrence of the rectovaginal fistula. And if you understand the injury, you know how debilitating and embarrassing that is. She had to go to a physician who she didn't know, spread her legs in front of this person. He did an examination and caused a recurrence. I mean, that's harmful in itself. They didn't tell her or failed to tell her that they had already approved their disability. Mr. Bachman is wrong.
Counsel, what is the nature of the claim against the employer? Is it that they were reckless or negligent with respect to the physician that they referred her to, or is the nature of the claim that given her medical condition, they should not have referred her at all?
Well, I believe simply subjecting her to that examination was wrong. I mean, they did nothing to there was some allegations that there was some confusion as to her return to work date, as I was indicating earlier.
So the insistence on a second opinion is the real gravamen of your action against them.
That's correct, if done in an impermissible way. Certainly they had a right to request that second opinion.
So what was impermissible about it?
They lied to her. They had, in fact, approved her disability a week before the meeting. Mr. Ballman is wrong when he says...
But isn't that irrelevant as to whether or not they have the right to ask for a second opinion?
Well...
You can see they have that right.
They have the right done in a permissible way. They lied to her. They misled her. And, in fact, once she told them, Your Honor, that disability benefit...
It's a tough world, and employers lie to employees all the time. It's not necessarily actionable.
In this case, they feared she wasn't being all that straight with them. Right, because she had said 3 weeks and then 7 weeks and had missed a lot of work. So
but
it's
Your Honor,
impermissible way. Where are the rules about how this is to be done?
Because each and every form that she submitted in accordance with ADT's policy listed the dates of March 1st, 1993 as return to work day. There was no confusion. The general manager signed the application. And it says, I have verified the actual disability of this employee and approved sickness benefits. He never told her at the meeting on February 8th that he did that.
Does that form, though, say how long? Because the issue wasn't that they had already approved, and I don't think the other side disagrees they approved 3 weeks. The issue was she going to come back and get the extra four? Does that form say how long that is approval
yes.
for?
Yes. It Where was filled out by him. It says, date of first full day absent, January 11th, 1993. Date of return to duty, 3/1/93. That's what her job
suggests. I'm still not sure why that's so key here. Why is that so key? When you have a right to have a second opinion, where's the limitation that you're putting on it about the permissible way to choose to do that?
Well, Your Honor, they contend that there was some confusion as to the duration of her disability. There was no confusion.
But what if there? So if there wasn't?
Well, why don't they just tell her, look, your disability.
But maybe they did, and they should have. What if they should have? But does that amount to a cause of action of intentional infliction of emotional distress, given the elements?
Well, Your Honor, as to the nature of the examination, I would suggest. Again, I refer back to if it's a simple orthopedic examination, then I don't believe there's a problem. This is certainly a more embarrassing type of. It's a cervical exam from someone she has no idea who he is.
She has the right to ask for it.
Yeah.
An exam in a permissible way if they don't lie to her about the examination.
So you're saying the type of exam if it's an embarrassing exam, the employer can't get it. Only can get a non-embarrassing exam.
Well,
that's what you're saying.
I think that you have to look at the type of exam here in considering that her opinions. When her doctor said, "Don't do it," you'll be fearful, and the fact that she said, take my disability away.
It seems to me what you're saying is the thrust of your cause of action involves the internal politics and management of this business. If I understand what you're saying, the company had the right to request the exam.
That's correct.
Your cause of action arises because somebody in the company had already signed the forms, knew they were going to grant her the extension, but they kept that in the drawer and kept that withheld from her. And that's how your cause of action arises. The fact that this form had now been completed and is in somebody's drawer unknown to her, when they sent her, are you saying that cuts off their right to request the exam?
Well, I think you have to look at the fact of her willing to give up those disability benefits. And when she was told there's no option, then the only thing she would be giving up was her job. And she was fearful of losing her job if she did not get this second opinion examination. She was willing to forego her benefits.
You've already said they had the right to require the exam.
That's correct, they did.
Do you agree with the counsel that if you fail against first of all, let me backtrack. Have you tried the case against the doctor yet?
We have not.
Okay. If you fail to prove the doctor was negligent and the jury comes back for the doctor, do you agree that your cause of action against ADT goes away?
Well, I don't believe it does, because I think there is some issue on the part of the psychologist report who said that she was suffering from this emotional disability prior to the examination when she was called a liar and was forced for fear of losing your job to go to this examination.
So even if you have an exam they're allowed to conduct, and they conduct, the doctor conducts the exam in a proper way, that you still have a cause for intentional infliction of emotional distress.
Based upon the psychologist's report that she was suffering prior to the examination.
That's the question I had. I thought the damages here were based upon the performance of Dr. Bauer, but you seem to be saying, I'm following your argument to the point that you're saying that if the company had already made a decision that they were going to give her the disability, forcing her to take the examination, there was no purpose for that because they'd already decided to give it. So why force her to take the examination?
That's correct.
If her emotional distress occurred because of that, the thought of having to take this examination and all and that sort of thing, that was the damage, then I could follow your argument. But I thought the damages here were resulted from the fact that she claims to have been injured by the way in which Dr. Bauer performed the examination.
Well, that is correct. That's true. I was asked whether or not if Dr. Bauer was somehow released or was found non-negligent in this case, would we still have a claim? And I believe we would.
So you're saying that that at least a portion of the damages are the suffering that she allegedly incurred before the examination?
That is correct, Your Honor.
I have not yet been convinced that this is an intentional tort case, so you probably ought to work on that issue. The Fife standard, you know, there has to be a causal connection. And the standard, as bad as it might be, in Fife and Van Foss and some of the others, is the issue of substantial certainty as opposed to intentional, deliberate intent to be equated with substantial certainty. And obviously we found in the Brady case that was an unconstitutional application. My question is, how in the world do you get that it is even substantially certain to occur, forgetting the deliberate intent standard, that sending her to another doctor was substantially certain to cause her injury, assuming that it's a workers' comp case?
Well, we are speaking of both psychic and physical injury. I think knowing what they knew about her particular condition, and that it was a rectovaginal fistula, knowing that it was a serious tear, and she had complied with all the particular forms from the company, so they had some understanding of what she had gone through. Forcing her for fear of losing her job, they knew that something was going to happen, be it psychic or physical.
So you think when Kinney told her she had to go get a second examination, he knew or should have known that there was going to be a serious physical injury to her, even though the doctor might very well be an intervening cause?
I don't know if he had specific knowledge of a certain physical injury, but he knew from his meeting when she was very emotional and troubled that he was certainly, by forcing her to go for fear of losing her job, was going to cause a psychic injury. Absolutely, he knew that. His understanding was he wanted her to quit the company. And by forcing her to go through this exam, that she would quit.
But again, unless a psychic injury, under the current state of the law, is directly connected with a contemporaneous physical injury, it is non-compensable.
Well, there was certainly some concern that, based upon her physician and her own comments, that if I go through this exam, I'll be hurt, according to my doctor. She even went against her doctor's wishes when she did this. Certainly there was some physical harm.
Isn't the word her doctor used possibly, not you will be?
I think that's what her doctor suggested. On one of the forms, he suggested she should
and
return.
And didn't the second doctor have those medical records, and couldn't the second doctor have made a judgment call that I don't do a physical exam, I just review the records and make a determination and can give you a second opinion that 7 weeks is appropriate?
He did not have those records, but he did make the same determination as her physician after he conducted this physical
exam.
And
didn't the company approve the 7 weeks after the second opinion?
Yes, they did, correct.
So they weren't firing her.
Well, that's correct, they weren't. But when she said to them at this meeting, I will give up my disability rights, then everything should have stopped, because that was supposedly, everything was contingent upon these disability rights. And when she said, take the money, take the disability benefits, I don't want to go to the exam. Their comment, again, was, you have no other choice. The only thing that she surmised from that is, if I don't get this exam, I'm going to lose my job. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Henderson. Mr. Bachman, you've used your time, so you may take 30 seconds.
Okay. Counsel, why would your company make her go get this exam if they already have determined she's going to get the extension of benefits and on top of the fact that she was apprehensive enough to say, I'll forfeit the disability?
They had not approved it. Mr. Kinney had signed the form. It's very clear in the record, in his deposition on page 121 and 122, that his understanding when he did that was that he was merely certifying the disability, not the period, that the period would be determined by the examination, and that the actual disability would be approved in New Jersey and not in, Mr. Kinney wasn't the final approving authority. He was just signing off on it up through the chain. There was legitimate confusion.
In the affidavits that are in the case when this gets
It's clear as to his understanding when he signed the form in his deposition testimony. Her job was not threatened. She admitted in her deposition that her job was not threatened. That's in the supplement at page 12. There was confusion as to her disability period. She asked for 3 weeks. She came back and asked for 7, and in doing so, submitted documentation dated before the surgery. What's up? That's what the company was asking. This argument about the emotional distress being unrelated to what happened at the physical examination, this is the first time that that's come up. The Court of Appeals clearly understood, and it's in page 10 in the appendix, that this is a claim where the mental anguish arose out of the injury that was sustained. And I can cite you directly to that. So on page 10 of the appendix, and the Court of Appeals stated,
we'll find it.
Okay. In any event, they were very clear as to what their understanding of the claim was. So for all those reasons, for the fact that we do have an intentional tort claim here under Fife, that there is a privilege and there was intervening cause as a matter of law, the decision of the Court of Appeals should be reversed and the judgment of the trial court should be reinstated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bachman. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.